The Tao of Self-Confidence, Episode 831.
Welcome to the Tao of Self-Confidence, where I share stories of amazing women who have discovered their inner journey to self-confidence. Visit our website at thetaoofselfconfidence.com. Your inner journey to self-confidence awaits.
Well, hello, friend. Welcome to the Tao of Self-Confidence, where I share stories of amazing women who have discovered their inner journey to self-confidence. I'm your host today, Sheena Yap Chan, and today I have a phenomenal lady on the show today. She has been serving the AAPI community, and I'm super excited to have her here today sharing her story. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Daphne Kwok. Daphne, how are you today? Maybe you can fill in a little bit more about yourself to the listeners.
Well, Sheena, thank you so much for including me in this illustrious group of women. And so I'm always so pleased to be able to share my experiences. So hopefully that through those learnings, through those sharings, that hopefully I can make other people's lives a little bit easier as well, too. I'm actually been based in Washington, D.C. area my entire life for the most part. And I've been so fortunate to have really worked on behalf of the Asian American Pacific Islander community, more specifically in the area of civil rights, political empowerment. And this is how I've ended up spending my career. And it's something I certainly did not expect I would be doing even after graduating from college.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. And I just want to say thank you for all the work that you do, because I know it's not easy going out there and empowering our community. I know there's a lot of roadblocks and challenges, but it's always about pushing forward, because if not, nothing ever happens. So I just wanted to mention that. And Daphne, what's your cultural background?
So I am Chinese American. My parents immigrated from China, from the Shanghai area. And they were among sort of the earlier ones. They came in the 1950s at the fall of China, and so settled here into the Washington, D.C. area. And so we have been here literally inside the Beltway for nearly 60 years.
Oh, wow. Thanks for sharing that. And what'd be your favorite self-confidence quote?
I think maybe the quote would be, just do it. I think we just need to do it.
I love it. I know, especially as women, especially as Asian women, we tend to be more over analytical, and we tend to overthink before we go out there and do something, because also our cultural upbringing, right? We're afraid to make mistakes. We don't want to look like we're not perfect. But honestly, making mistakes is how we build confidence and keep moving forward, because it helps us learn to figure things out along the way. So short, but sweet and impactful at the same time. So thank you very much. And Daphne, what would be your definition of self-confidence?
For me, I think self-confidence is really that being able to have the courage to be able to make bold decisions and actually just put one foot in front of the next and actually take action. I think, as you said, for AAPIs, especially AAPI women, we are more passive. We are more cautious. I would say we're probably not very bold. And I would say that was certainly me growing up. And so it's amazing how I've turned into the person that I have. People that have seen me grow up from a child to now are just like, oh my gosh, Daphne, I can't believe that's you now. So I take that as a compliment, because I have sort of shed my shell. Yes, and I'd love to be able to share how I think I was able to do that.
Thanks so much. And I love what you mentioned, making bold actions, right? I mean, I know that quote, fortune favors the bold or the brave. And it's not easy to go out there and make bold actions or make bold decisions, especially when you've been taught all your life to have other people make decisions for you. And, you know, that actually brings our confidence down, because we feel like we can't trust our own gut to go out there and do something. But the more we can practice on making those bold decisions and actions, the more we get confident, the more we can go out there and forge our own path and even empower our own community. So I really love that definition that you mentioned. And Daphne, what was your life like before your discovery of self-confidence? Especially, you know, you've been in the States for 60 years, and I'm pretty sure growing up in those times weren't always so easy. What was that like?
Well, I have to say I was probably your typical Chinese American, you know, growing up here. I grew up in Northern Virginia in Fairfax County, and in the 1960s, 70s, predominantly white. It's interesting. I'm from Annandale, Virginia, and now Annandale is a little Korea town, which is so fantastic. We actually have Asian restaurants, Korean restaurants, Korean grocery stores. But growing up, it was really all white and very suburban because we're literally outside of Washington, D.C. And going to schools, we are very privileged. I will say that my brothers and I attended private school all the way up until high school. And so those private schools were all very small, right? Very small in population, but actually then really not very diverse as well too. So my brothers and I were always probably, you know, the 1, 2, 3 Asians in the entire school, right? And very few African Americans and even fewer Hispanics. And I would say that even up until high school, I went to the local high school, 2,000 students. And looking back on it, I would say literally, I think there may be 100 of us out of the 2,000 that were people of color at that time, which was in the late 1970s. And we actually had a very large international crowd because this Northern Virginia area has a large diplomatic core. But so, you know, we were all very few Asians, and I was very shy and meek as a child. I really never spoke, you know, and being a very traditional Chinese American family, right? You listen to your elders, you listen to the teachers, you take everything in. So I actually did not necessarily speak up much. It was amazing that in high school, I actually started an international program because we didn't have many Asian American students. So my brother and I started it. So I think that was the beginning of leadership. But it really, I have to commend my parents as immigrants themselves, but they were educated here in the U.S. They got very involved in community, whether through our schools, serving on the boards, our orchestras, serving on the boards. So they were very immersed in community, the broader community, because there wasn't much in the Asian community. So I think we followed in their footsteps.
I love that. And thanks for sharing that. And I think it's always interesting to know what was life like back then, right? Especially growing up in the late 70s. You mentioning that out of 2,000 students, there's only 100 students who are people of color, which is really crazy because, you know, diversity is such a huge topic nowadays, right? And, you know, some people are still not understanding what true diversity is. But, you know, what was that point in your life when you, you know, decided to go out there, especially like empowering the AAPI community? What gave you the courage and confidence to go out there and just keep moving forward? I know you said you started in high school, but what kept going?
I would say I went to college. I went to Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. This was 1980s, early 1980s. And out of a class of 600 incoming freshmen. And at that time, I was in the class of 1984. We had the largest Asian American grouping. And that was only like 30 students out of 600, right? Wesleyan is known for its diversity. So we had very large African American community, a much smaller Hispanic community. But it was really there the first time I actually had Asian and Asian American classmates. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have people that look like me that, you know. And so I instantly bonded, especially with the Asian American students. And to me, that was the first time I really felt like I had a cohort. And I was just in heaven there. And so, of course, there was an Asian American student group. I instantly joined that. I ended up becoming a leader there in my last 2 years. And it's really through that I have to really credit Wesleyan University gave me the confidence. You talk about confidence, because I felt so comfortable at that university. I felt everybody was so kind, so welcoming, so embracing. And that's where I really shed my shell, I would say. I actually started to really come out and blossom, gain my confidence, taking a leadership role. But, you know, actually in the classroom, you know, I dreaded classes that, you know, you're graded on participation, because I was still, I believed in, you know, you listen to the teacher and that what the teacher says is it, right? You know, to question the teacher, we don't do that, right? And so that was really difficult for me to actually speak up in classes. I would dread those classes. And I'm like, oh my God, I barely got out of those kind of classes. But I really thrived in the extracurricular, getting involved in the student organization. And because there still were a few African-American Hispanic, of course, we bonded together and became, you know, a very strong minority community. I ended up advocating, you know, writing letters to the administration, the president, protesting this, protesting that, you know, not enough students of color being admitted, not enough faculty of color. I never really realized what that would actually lead me to. It's really led to my entire career fighting for people of color. But it all started from really being involved in my Asian American student organization and that leadership role. I never thought that, you know, defending a budget in front of the student government, hey, why do Asians, how come our Asian group got the smallest budget? Hey, how come the other groups get so much more? Having to go and fight, you know, having to do publicity to get people to our events. All of those were skill sets that I talk about now, how I thought I was just having fun socializing, right? But actually, those were real life skill sets that today I lean on every single day, and it was really the basis and foundation of my entire career leaving and graduating from the university. But that is where I really got the confidence. Got the real confidence that I could do something. I could, you know, speak up. I could lead. And to me, that really opened up my world.
I love it. And, you know, thank you so much for sharing that. I know how you feel, like, especially growing up in Canada in the 90s. I remember watching All American Girl for the first time on TV. And I was so happy because there was finally an Asian person on TV, someone that looked like me or, you know, had similarities, right? Because it was so hard to, you know, see any Asian role models in media. And especially when there's someone that looks like you, you instantly bond, right? Because there's nobody else. And you don't need a large number to create an impact. Like you mentioned, when you were in college, there was, you know, 30 other Asian Americans who attended, and you guys decided to just create a group and just, you know, started empowering your community, started doing things that, you know, to advance Asian Americans. So I really commend you, and I'm really grateful that you're able to do that. And, you know, because of that, what's your life been like now?
So I will say that after I got out of college, I sought an organization, Asian American organization, back at home in Northern Virginia. It was Organization of Chinese Americans, OCA, which had been founded in the early 70s. And one of our good friends was the founder of it. So I joined the local chapter, and I had just started. And there, at that time, there really were not many Asian American organizations here. Getting involved in that local chapter, becoming a local president, becoming on the national board, one thing led to another. And somehow I got very heavily involved in politics, which blows me away because I never got involved in politics. I didn't even take any poli sci class. If you ask me what a Democrat or Republican is at that time, I don't think I could tell you. Our family, of course, being a good Asian, we are focused around music, not politics. And so even though we lived inside the Beltway, but I sort of fell into a crowd that happened to include our venerable, you know, Norman Mineta, a tremendous mentor to me, Patsy Mink, the late Patsy Mink, the congressman, all these Asian American Democratic members of Congress. And so I sort of fell into Asian Democratic Party politics in the 1980s, which was very early in that movement. So getting involved for extracurricular, all this for fun, one thing led to another. And in a very small Asian American community, you know, if you end up doing things, you get recognized for being effective. And so just one thing led to another. And so my whole career, as people ask me, you know, I actually only really applied for a job once where I had no connections at all. All my other jobs were through people I knew or organizations that I had been involved in. But I have to say where I really life-changing, if you want to talk about life-changing, it's I became executive director of the Organization of Chinese Americans in 1990. I thought I was too young to be an executive director of a national civil rights organization. But from that, I was able to be there for 11 years. And we had tremendous stability and leadership and staff at the time, and we grew. And in the 1990s, for the Asian American community here in DC, it was only myself and an assistant. And the Japanese American Citizens League, which was our sister organization we modeled ourselves after, had a Washington, D.C. lobbyist and an assistant. There were four Asian Americans in 1990 working on behalf of the entire national Asian American community in the area of civil rights. And this is pre-computer, really, and pre-emails. So this was back in the dark ages. But it was at that time I really realized that if I didn't speak up and my colleague from JACL didn't speak up, and we were in rooms, right, in civil rights with community, with the NAACP, National Council of Raza, Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, if we didn't speak up in those rooms, then no one's going to speak up for us. If we went to a meeting on Capitol Hill with members of Congress and their staff, if we didn't speak up, no one's going to speak up for Asians. So I got forced to speak in those kind of situations, because I realized, gosh, it was really a very heavy burden on me. If I didn't speak up, our issues would never be told in Washington. And so I learned to have my voice during those times. And it was very tumultuous times. There was hate crimes going on at that time, anti-affirmative action against us. You know, a lot of the anti-China stuff going on that we were all suspected of being spies. That was headed, you know, towards us as Asians, anti-immigration, English-only efforts. So there was a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment going on that we were constantly having to fight. And so I ended up becoming a spokesperson, right, a national spokesperson taking media interviews, doing TV, you know, and who would have ever expected me, who was so shy and quiet, to be on national TV, CNN, other major outlets and being interviewed by the Washington Post, the New York Times, blah, blah, blah. And so in my position, I did rise to become a national Asian American leader. And under President Clinton, I had the chance to represent the Asian American community 1 year, I think, and for May Asian Heritage Month. We were able to have a ceremony at the White House in the Rose Garden. And because I was elected at that time to be a chair of a National Council of Asian Pacific Americans, it was a first coalition of Asian American organizations. I was asked to represent the community and speak at the White House in the Rose Garden, presenting the president, you know, a basket of books, you know, Asian American books, and being able to use that platform to, as many people said, I couldn't believe I had the guts, because at the time we were fighting for the nomination of Bill Lanley to become the Assistant Attorney General of Civil Rights for the very first time in the Department of Justice. Preeminently qualified. The Republicans used him to attack affirmative action, so would not give him a vote. So this was the issue that OCA that I was heading up. And so I was there with President Clinton, and Bill Lanley was in that front row of the Rose Garden. And I knew I had to use that time to make once again the statement to the president that, you know, we still had unfinished business with him. We still needed him to appoint Bill Lanley as Assistant Attorney General. And all my colleagues that were, you know, in that audience, who were all the Asian American appointees, nearly, as they said, including Bill Lanley and the staff, said they nearly fell out of their chair when I said that. They said, Daphne, you had the guts to say in front of the President of the United States that, you know, he still needs to appoint Bill Lanley. And I don't know. To me, it's like it was natural. If I didn't make use of that time, it would have been a lost opportunity. And what's a better opportunity than you had the attention of the President of the United States right there, right? So I look back upon that, and I think my parents are just probably flabbergasted, and they were in the audience there. They're probably flabbergasted that here their daughter, who was so quiet, would be able to have the opportunity to represent the Asian American community in front of the President of the United States. And still be able to stick him with an advocacy point. And at that time, because I got so much visibility and press, you know, family, friends that we grew up with, you know, my elders. One time I was visiting one of our Chinese American friends of my parents. She said to me, Daphne, of all the children, I would never expected you to be the one to be where you are today. And because she knew me as such a silent child, and here I was speaking up in meetings with the President of the United States. So that's why I say anything is possible with anybody. You never know. Once you get your confidence, you get in the groove, and you have the opportunities, you know, take advantage.
I love it. And, you know, such a great story, especially, you know, it goes to show when you have a huge purpose, you know, sometimes it's not just about you, right? Like, you're representing our whole community. You know, there's people out there who are also rooting for you to make those advancements for the AAPI community. And if no one is out there doing it, nothing gets ever happened, right? I know there's a lot of people who complain that there's not enough representation. And I always believe that if you really crave for it, you got to start it yourself, even if it means starting from zero. I mean, it was the main reason why I started this podcast, because I didn't see any podcasts sharing, you know, Asian women's stories, right? Authentic stories, the things that they went through and how they're able to overcome it. And these stories are important because everyone can relate to at least one story and realize if it's possible for her, then it's possible for me. Just like your story, you know, nobody ever thought you could do this because you were shy and quiet as a child, but you proved them wrong, right? Because actions speak louder than words, and look where it has landed you.
Well, that's why I think, you know, it's so true. It's like we have to be at the table, right? We have to be at the table. Otherwise, you will be served on a platter. And it's really true, right? And so that's why whatever opportunities we have, even how uncomfortable it might be, or if people don't think they're ready, if you're given that opportunity to sit at a table, to have a voice, we AAPIs have got to take on those opportunities. And it's really very important.
I love that. And I think that's great advice. You know, if you have the opportunity to sit at the table, take it. Especially for Asian women, we're so afraid to take it sometimes because of our upbringing. I mean, it's 2021. We have to go out there and make bold choices, especially, you know, the pandemic has really given us a slap in the face. it's now is the time for us to just step up and go out there regardless of what people think, right? If we make mistakes, we make mistakes. If we get rejected, we get rejected. It's all part of life. But, you know, this whole ride is worth it because we can create true change and the positive impact that we deserve. So I really love, you know, your story and just you being here, sharing it. I'm just so grateful that you're here today. And if our listeners wanted to get to know a little bit more about you and your story and want to connect to you, do you have any social media profiles or links that we can connect with?
I'm really bad at that. I am on LinkedIn, but I'm really not. So the best way for me is to email me is the best way to do it because I'm not really on social media. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. And to our listeners, if you want to connect with Daphne, you can also head on over to thetaoofselfconfidence.com and search for Daphne's name. Her show notes will pop up along with everything else that we talked about. And I really just want to thank Daphne today for taking the time to share her story and tips with us on self-confidence. So thank you so much, Daphne.
Well, thank you, Sheena, for doing this podcast series. And for all, I need to now go back and listen to all the women that you have interviewed too. I want to learn from them because we can definitely, we always will learn and pick up tips from everybody. And I hope that people that do have opportunities to share their background, their experiences will do so, so that we can all help and lift each other up. It's so critical, especially now, right? In 2021, when the spotlight is on AAPI. It's on AAPI women. And so if we don't grab the time right now, we will have lost that opportunity. I really, truly believe that. So we really have to make it take advantage of this time. So thank you for everything that you're doing, Sheena, and helping all of us.
Thank you. And I totally agree. Now is the time for us to just step up. And yes, I have a ton of episodes you can check out. So I've interviewed over 700 Asian women on this topic. Thank you again. And to our listeners, be on the lookout for another new episode of another amazing women's journey to self-confidence, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to another amazing episode of The Tao of Self-Confidence. You can order your copy of Asian Women Who Boss Up book by visiting our website at thetaoofselfconfidence.com. Your inner journey to self-confidence awaits.